me. Let me get your antenna. Top of the ETB. Hey, they got your bridge valve.
Houston, we'd like to confirm that you have closed the O2 valve on your plus over.
That's firm.
Roger out.
I'll double check it, Bruce, but pursuit flow on the ISO valve. Turn your push pump off, your push fan off.
Off. That's off.
Connect your push water. Connect the limb water. Put that one in. One. Is there wind? Kind of fitting within there.
Audio, mild head. A receive, B off.
And Terry's, this is Houston, over.
Go ahead, Houston.
And Terry's, this is Houston. And going through the comm checklist, we'd like to leave the S-band transmitter and receiver in secondary. Over.
Okay, will do.
And Terry's, this is Houston.
Go ahead.
All right, Roger. We'd like you to pull the circuit breaker on the TV camera at this time. Over.
Intercepted that.
Roger. This is Apollo Control, Houston, at 119 hours, 59 minutes. We've completed the shift handover in Mission Control. Flight Director Milton Windler and his maroon team of flight controllers now on. Capsule communicator on this shift is astronaut Gordon Fullerton. There will be a change of shift briefing shortly in the MSC News Center main auditorium. At the present time, Flight Director Windler is reviewing the mission status with each of his flight controllers, going around the room checking status, and also discussing the lunar liftoff, which will occur on this ship tomorrow. We're about 1 minute, 15 seconds from reacquiring the command module on its 20th revolution. And at this time, we expect that crewmen on both spacecraft are in the midst of an eat period prior to beginning their scheduled rest periods. We'll stand by for acquisition of Kitty Hawk now in about 45 seconds. This is Apollo Control at 120 hours, 15 minutes. We're ready now for the change of shift press briefing in the MSC News Center auditorium. We'll switch to that at this time. This is Apollo Control at 120 hours, 40 minutes. During the change of shift briefings, we had conversations going on with both the lunar module and Antares and with Stu Russa in Kitty Hawk. We have tape recorded on the conversations with Antares, and we'll be prepared to play that back. The conversations with Stu Russa primarily concerned the HICON camera. Capcom Ken Mattingly, who is handling the CSM side of the Capcom duties, advised Russa that tests on the ground indicate that the HICON camera may in fact be getting usable pictures, and we asked Russa to attempt to verify that the shutter is operating. This would add to the feeling of confidence that perhaps the HICON camera is operating properly. And Russa was advised to operate the camera and to attempt to look down toward the aperture with a flashlight and see if he could verify that the shutter is operating. If he can verify this, the plan at this time would be to use the HICON camera, the lunar topographic camera, at the next opportunities to photograph the potential landing site at Descartes, which would be on the 25th and 26th revolutions. Russa is finishing up a meal period, and as soon as he is completed with that, he's scheduled to enter a sleep period. We're in conversation with the lunar module at the present time. We'll pick up with tape-recorded communications and then stand by to follow live.
Yes, sir, Terry.
And Terry Houston, go ahead, Ed.
Hello, good. We're about ready to give you some weights on return equipment.
Okay, Ed, ready to copy.
Okay, we're ready to come up with the first bag. Got that one. Houston, let me tell you what we've done. Remember, Al said that we brought in the small rocks from the comprehensive sample area in one way bag.
Okay.
We couldn't get them in the SRC. We got in, we got the contingency sample here, and it so happens that the material cracked on the contingency sample bag and it's leaking. So we're putting it in the way bag with these other rocks. And the weight of that total combination is 5 pounds.
Okay, I've got you. The contingency sample's in that way bag with a total weight of 5 pounds.
Right. And Houston, the next bag has 2 toy-sized football rocks in it. And they weigh 15 pounds total.
Okay, Ed. Stand by 1 Ed.
And that's going into the left-hand storage compartment.
Okay, left-hand storage compartment with two Little League footballs, 15 pounds.
All right. Okay, Houston, both of those rock bags are going to left-hand storage compartment.
Okay, Ed, that's the one with the contingency sample on the comprehensive and the football ones, eh?
That's affirmative.
Ed, if you'll stand by just 1 minute, I need a copy of read down from Stu, and I'll be right back to you.
Okay.
I'm Terry Houston. Okay, I'm ready to listen to you for a while. Anything else you might have?
Okay. Well, we want you to be discriminating about our samples now. We have a comprehensive rock in the left-hand storage compartment. The comprehensive finds, however, are in the SRC.
Okay, got that. The rocks. Comprehensive rocks in the storage compartment and the fines in the SRC.
That's firm. And bag MM is replacing II.
And Terry Houston, say again.
Okay, we replaced magazine JJ on the commander's camera with LL and II on the LMB's camera with MM.
Okay, we've got LL and MM on there now.
That's firm. All right, Houston and Terry, verify which are the two 16mm mags that have been used.
Roger.
Houston and Terry.
Go ahead, Ed.
Did you understand my question, Kurt?
I guess I didn't. I didn't realize it was a question. Go ahead. Say it again, please.
Okay, we have three 16mm mags, of which we only use two. Can you tell me which two we used?
I'll have to check back. I'll give you an answer in a minute here.
Okay.
And Terry Houston?
Go ahead.
Our records show that the used magazines are Charlie Charlie and Echo Echo, and the Delta Delta should be the unused one, don't they?
Okay, thank you. That's what we thought. Okay, Houston, we're making a slight deviation to our storage plan in the ETV.
Okay, Ed, go ahead with it.
In addition to the three 16mm mags called for, we're also taking back out the one we didn't get used today.
Okay, Ed, sounds like a good idea.
And in addition to the black and white mag KK, we're taking back out Juliet. We've only used 40 frames off of that, and we've got very few pictures of Lamb and other appropriate type shots.
Roger, Juliet, you're also going to take out on the second EVA.
That's fine.
And Terry Houston.
Go ahead.
Just following you in the checklist here and looking ahead, it looks to us like you'll probably get to the EVA debriefing at about in an hour and a half, about 1:22. Does this agree with your estimate? We just wanted to know to be sure to have the right people standing by.
Well, it's not on this card. How far is it on the Lunar Service checklist? Right now we're weighing the SRC. And we find that it weighs 43 pounds.
Okay, 43 pounds on the SRC, and if you're just proceeding down the card with no changes to it, well then we'll figure out when you get to the debriefing.
Okay, that's what we're doing.
Okay.
Listen, we've had enough drills today without changing our checklist.
We didn't really mean to suggest that, Al. We just disregard.
Just kidding. Houston, I'm standing by for my T3s.
This is Houston. Say again, please.
I'm standing by for a liftoff table.
Oh, okay.
Whatever red you have.
Roger, Ed. I've got them for 20 through 25, if you're ready.
Okay, it's a little late for 20. But, go ahead.
Okay, I give it to you anyway. They fill in all the blanks. 20 is 120-4622. 21-122-4445. 23 is, did I miss 22? I think I missed 22 is 124-4306. P23 is 126-4129. P24 128-3951. T25 is 130-3811.
Okay, read. Band 20 is 120-4622. 21 is 122-4445. 22 is 124-4306. 23 is 126-4129. 24 is 128-3951. 25, 130-3811.
Roger, your readback is correct. Short status on the CSM up there. He's in good shape. Done everything on the timeline, right on the money. The only problem on board seems to be the topo camera. The plane change went well with a delta V of 671 feet per second, about 8 or 9 feet per second more than pre-flight, which was just a circular IC orbit slightly. Over.
Okay, good for him. Is he using the 500, the 500 millimeter in place of the HICON?
We're mulling that over. Actually, the substitution won't occur until tomorrow, and that's most likely what we'll do. We're running one more test on the HICON to verify that it is indeed hopeless, and then we'll back it up with a 500.
This is Apollo Control at 120 hours, 54 minutes. We've bid Stu Russa good night. The communications officer reports that he's turned his comm off in the spacecraft. He's scheduled to have a 9.5 hour rest period, and we wouldn't expect to hear from him until that rest period is completed. The science briefing on EVA-1, which had been scheduled for 4 p.m. in the MSC News Center auditorium, has been canceled. Dr. David W. Strangway, chief of the geophysics branch at the Manned Spacecraft Center, will be available at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time in the MSC News Center main auditorium to answer questions concerning EVA-1. And at the present time, we show Kitty Hawk in an orbit 61.8 by 57.7 nautical miles. Spacecraft's current altitude is 58.5, and the velocity is 53.53. We'll be losing contact with Kitty Hawk in a little over 17 minutes. As the spacecraft goes behind the moon on its 20th revolution. We'll continue to stand by for any calls from the crew aboard Antares on the lunar surface. At 120 hours, 56 minutes, this is Apollo Control, Houston, standing by. This is Apollo Control at 121 hours, 13 minutes. And Kitty Hawk has just gone around the corner on its 20th revolution of the moon. When next we reacquire the spacecraft, we would expect Stu Roosa to be asleep. He turned off his communications midway through this revolution at about 120 hours, 45 minutes, and we did not hear further from him on the front side pass. We'll continue to stand by for any communications with the lunar module and Antares. In a previous conversation with the crew on Antares, Capcom Gordon Fullerton queried them as to how their checklists were going and what looked like a good time to begin the post-EVA debriefing. According to our figures here, that would probably occur at about 122 hours ground elapsed time.
Antares.
Antares, Houston, go ahead.
We've finished our meal, whatever meal it was, and we're off and running on the Bliss Feedwater Collection.
Roger, Al.
Houston, Antares.
Go ahead.
Roger, please be advised that one RCU weighs 0.38 kilograms.
Roger, Ed.
The RCU, or Remote Control Unit, which Mitchell is referring to, has a known Earth weight and is used in calibrating the scales which are used to weigh the portable life support system feed water collection bags to determine water usage rates on EVA-1, and these usage rates will then be used to compute the EVA-2 consumables and to determine the amount of water available for EVA-2.
Houston, the commander's feed water is 0.25 kilograms.
Roger, Ed. Commander's feed water, 0.25 kilograms.
Houston, LFP feed water, 0.19 kilograms.
Roger, Ed, 0.19 on your feed water.
Okay. Houston, Apollo 14. Brother Houston, Antares.
Antares, go ahead.
Okay, we've arrived at the EVA debriefing block. But in the meantime, let us say to the medics that we haven't had any medication, that the commander's PRD is 16051, and the LNP is 07049. O2 top off, and the water recharge for both places, and the condition of the crew is excellent.
Roger, Al, glad to hear it. About the start of the next EVA, we plan not to wake you up any earlier than scheduled, but if you are awake and ready to go, we'll be ready to support for an early egress on the next one. Over.
Okay, that sounds good. We'd like to plan on early egress anyway, I think, so that we'll be in a position to get the full EVA-2 still get back in at the regularly scheduled timeline.
Roger. The LEM status is completely ops normal. Consumables are in good shape. We believe that the steerable antenna problem you had during descent was probably due to a multipath reception at AOS, and we're predicting now that it will probably work okay for ascent. Over.
Okay. Glad to hear that one.
Okay, question number one about EVA one. How do you feel about your planned second EVA now that you've done the first, especially in terms of time and terrain? Over.
Well, I think that the second EVA will go a little more smoothly with respect to the timeline. It's not as complicated as far as the equipment is concerned. We don't spend as much time moving around with the cliffs and scientific equipment. It's primarily a geological traverse once the thing has gotten by the first few minutes. And we should be able to build a timeline and hang on to that real well. And we, of course, are again counting on at least a 30-minute extension to the nominal time. So that's the reason we'd like to start early.
Roger, do you feel the terrain will be any problem?
No, we don't. We had no difficulty at all traversing the terrain. As a matter of fact, we were bounding along even with the barbells and the net. Traversing is extremely easy, although we have a rolling landscape and lots of craters to circumnavigate. I believe from looking at the cone that we'll be able to get up there with no trouble at all.
Okay.
I completely concur in that the undulating terrain is just a surprise. It's not that much more difficult.
Roger, Ed. Second question is, would you please describe the rim of doublet, especially the blockiness? Over.
Well, I don't think you'd call doublet a blocky rim. The craters, north and south doublet, of course, are both older craters and have subdued rims. There are some blocks of ejecta at and near the vicinity of the rim, but and if there are a few blocks down inside, for example, we can look at the west wall of South Dublin from here and see a few fairly good-sized rocks, perhaps 3 or 4 feet at the largest. But I really wouldn't call it a blocky rim. It's a fairly well-subdued rim.
Concur, and the biggest blocks we can see on the rim of Dublin correspond to these large ones I pointed out in my TV pan. There are some of that size or maybe a little larger, but the population is minuscule compared with the total rim area of Dublin.
Roger. Third question, how deep is the Dips erosion crater?
It's not very deep at all. The photographs will show that it's perhaps only 4 inches at maximum depth.
Okay, and can you describe the lineations and how far out they went, their orientation and direction?
Are these delineations that I referred to earlier, or are you talking about lineations from the Dips engine?
The ones that you referred to earlier, Ed.
Okay, they're there, and I saw evidences of them at directions different than the exhaust would cause, but there just simply was not time to look at them. We'll have to look at them tomorrow.
Okay. Next question on the football samples. Were they documented?
That's affirmative. They were documented with a stereo pair before, in the case of both samples. And they were taken from the crater
which is located at, let's see, BQR, CR1 and 646. It came from the southwest, near the southwest river, that crater.
Roger, Al. Next question, did you notice any variations in soil mechanics characteristics at various locations where legs or poles were pushed in, such as the solar wind staff, the flag staff, geophone anchors, penetrometer, and so forth?
Yeah, there's a few places around, primarily fill, or rather a throw out from craters, or what are obviously near the rims of craters, have a softer, there's a softer material around them than there is just in general. However, that there are so many craters that you find the soft material quite often, but generally on the fresher ones. Along my traverse, rather along the upper geophone line, there are two or three fairly fresh craters along that line that had some quite soft material around them. And it was a matter of sinking in 2, 3, or 4 inches instead of the normal half to three quarters that we're sinking in out here.
Roger, Ed. On the surface features of rocks marked, well, we'd like a description of the surface features of the rocks. If they are marked, variations in rounding, angularity, grain size, size distribution, shape, texture, and color. Over.
You're getting into stuff we're going to have to look at tomorrow. We just barely had time to finish the all step and get back. The rocks I see from the cockpit, there are some rounded rocks. I can see two or three that are buried that have some rounding on top. I see some angular rocks. As far as granularity, crystal size, et cetera, et cetera, we didn't have time to look at any of that, so we have to wait till tomorrow.
Okay, this next question probably falls in the same category. I'll read it in case you have anything to say about it, and that is to describe the regolith, the general nature, fragment distribution, fragment shapes, variations in texture, color, surface patterns, and firmness.
Okay, we could give a quick one on that. I think we've already done most of it. The regolith is mostly a mouth, brown, or sometimes looking gray, powdery material, almost like a chalk, ground up. It's that sand, and that's defined grain. There are a few rocks scattered around, the population less than 1%, ranging in size from 5 to 6. Well, I guess 2 or 3 centimeters, but the ones that are obvious that aren't buried are 5 or 6 centimeters. Up to the largest ones that I've seen are the ones I showed you in the pan, which are 3 or 4 or 5 feet across. The distribution is less than 1%, but you see a few of these blocks sitting all around the landscape as far as you can see, and I guess they're even out over toward Dublin, which we didn't say was blocky, but these smaller ones might not be visible at that distance. And I can look to the north, and I don't see too many on the far edge of the crater over there either, but it could be that that's too far away to be able to see them well.
Okay, did you notice any variations in the color or surface patterns or texture?
To me, it looks all about the same as far as the general regolith here is concerned. But again, we haven't looked at it that carefully, or I didn't look at it that carefully, just because of the press of time. By and large, it is all this very fine-grained material with a few scattered rocks on top of it. Let's see if we can do a better job of describing it tomorrow for you.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's generally true. We can see areas, for example, looking normally out the window, that is in the cross sun direction, in my case to the south, where the rocks in one ejected pattern, fairly large rocks of 3 or 4 feet, appear to have a very lighter gray texture to them in comparison to the gray-brown which you had just described, which would be the regolith. And I noticed that this crater that sits out here to the 930 position of the lamp is also a brighter crater. It's a newer crater, has a raised rim, and it has a different color there, for example, than does the crater directly behind it, about the same distance, which is much older and a darker gray.
Roger, Al. Next question.
Generally, we'll find some variations. I think generally we'll find some variations in texture throughout the tomorrow's traverse.
Roger. How abundant was glass?
The only place I thought I saw glass, and I didn't have time to confirm it, was in a very small crater along the Thumper line. It looked like there was pools, a little pool of glass at the bottom, and this crater was only about 2 foot across and maybe 8 inches deep. It was had quite a bit of a small, chunky material in it, but it had a different color. It looked very glassy at the bottom, and I didn't have time to go back and look at it, but I'm sure there's some more of that around.
Roger. Last question is, how abundant were fillets? Do those by the limb appear to be disturbed by the dips? Over.
I think we find some fillets. I don't know whether the percentage is as high as 50% or not of the surface rocks, but yes, there is some filleting, and you'll notice in the small football-sized rocks, there is a fillet pattern around them. There is filleting here, of course, fairly close to the limb, and it's hard to tell whether it's natural or whether it's from the limb exhaust.
I concur completely with that.
Roger, that's all the pre-prepared questions. I'll check and make sure there's no last-minute ones here.
Okay, I might comment that looking at our footprint for the Met track and our footprints out to the LSAP site over to the camera, both looking down sun and cross sun, that the fresh dirt we've kicked up and turned over is noticeably darker, browner than the more mousy brown, lighter brown, undisturbed regolith that's on top.
Roger, Ed, that's interesting. Ed, the last time you left the LSAP site, can you give us the last time you happened to look at the number one geophone, was it still in place properly? Over.
That's firm. All three geophones were in good shape when I left them.
Okay. Terry's Houston, we're having some problem with the signal strength on the ALSEP. Is there any chance that the central station could have been disturbed such that the antenna alignment would no longer be proper over?
Not to my knowledge.
No, I don't think either one of us went by there again. I took some pictures of it, but nobody touched it after the antenna was aligned.
Well, I touched it, of course, and turning the number 5 switch off and on, but yeah, it didn't do anything.
Roger.
Hey, Houston, we'd like to proceed with the checklist now. I'd like to make a request that we plan starting the timeline tomorrow 1 hour early so that we'll be able to get in a 30-minute extension and still have time after we get back in to have a leisurely restowage.
Okay, Al, we'll go along with that all the way. We'll plan to start 1 hour early. In fact, if we're not recommending it, but if you want to start earlier than that, we'll be ready to support. You don't need to worry about support here. Over.
Well, let's see. Your nominal respiratory rate ends at 130 hours and 30 minutes. We'll be a good 6 hours and 6 hours and a half. Why don't we say 129 hours even? You wake us up if we haven't called you by then.
Okay, we're checking that figure and I'll give you a confirmation here if I get it.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to sleep more than 6 hours anyway, and we'll be in bed so that we have 6.5 hours. The way we're going now, all we have to do is rig the hammocks.
Roger.
And Houston, with you concur, I'll go ahead and select down voice backup, turn the power amp off, and get the VHF antenna to aft, which constitutes the last part of my comm checklist.
Okay, Ed, stand by one. Antares Houston, one final question. We noticed your H2O separator and the pluses were running kind of fast. Did you have any problem at all with water in your suits?
No, neither one of us.
Okay, I got that a little wrong. It's a separator in the LEM suit loop. So it would be a problem with water while you're on the LEM suit loop.
Not that we've recognized so far.
Okay. We'll go along with, we'll ring the alarm at 129 hours. And I think that completes all the items we have for you. You're clear to go ahead with the last three steps on before configuring for sleep. Over.
Very good. We'll press on with that now. Thank you so much.
Antares Houston, don't bother to acknowledge, but we're getting ready to do a station handover. You may hear a burst of noise. Over.